Blog Talk Radio.
And we are back, another Tuesday edition of the Pro Lacrosse Face-Off, live on MLO Radio, Waxworm Experience, and Blog Talk Radio. I'm James Boger, as always, hosting you guys. I'm joined by Tom Bovey, the prodigal partner in crime, and we're welcoming back Joe Keegan, who's back from a couple-week trivia sabbatical. To start off the show, I do want to go ahead and get this out of the way. It is Tom Bovey's birthday, and he has been gracious enough to cut his festivities short. Join us for a show that we're all pretty excited about this week. We do have a trio of guests that are going to come on starting about 15 minutes. We're going to be joined first by New York Lizards attackman Rob Pinnell, or midfielder. I don't know what position he's going to play. We're going to find that out, I guess. So Rob Pinnell is going to come on first. We're going to have Marcus Holman on 15 minutes after that, and then Chad Wiedmeyer on 15 minutes after that. So it's going to be an action-packed first hour of the show. Then we're going to spend the last 30 minutes kind of going over the biggest training camp storylines, and then get into a little bit of the NLL trade deadline, which hit Tom and the Minnesota Swarm a little close to home. And first off, I kind of want to start talking about the New York Lizards, because a lot of the things that we're going to be talking about today center around some of the big storylines. I can't think of a bigger team and a bigger storyline than what's going on in New York, strictly because this is the team that added the biggest pieces throughout the course of the offseason. This is the team that arguably made the biggest splash throughout the course of the offseason. And now that they've had their training camp, and now we've heard a couple rumors of exactly how that training camp's gone moving forward, it's going to be kind of interesting to see exactly how this team materializes and exactly if they can push it towards being a truly elite team throughout the course of a really long season. And, Tom, I kind of want to go to you first on the Lizards. Before we have Rob on, we've heard a lot about certain players who made a huge impact in training camps. What have you heard about exactly what the Lizards are doing and what training camp battles have been the most contentious, I guess, is the best word for it?
Well, I don't want to be the one that lets the cat out of the bag, but talking to numerous Lizards people, we had no Shamel Bratton in camp. I don't know if that's really a huge shock. I'll laugh about that one personally, but that's kind of a step. We also had no Steven Pizer, and if you take a look, he's no longer on the Lizards roster. So he has been he's a scratch. He will not be playing this season. So that's I guess maybe a guy I kind of half expected to make this team who, okay, well, he's just flat not going to play. So losing him is a step. We also lose Michael Kimmel, who has family commitments, life commitments outside of the game. He is not going to play this season. So two players who I guess I expected to make at least the 25-man, if not the regular 19-man, gone. Kimmel is a great player, a guy who's done a number of things in this league, was a big part of the Bayhawks championship runs, is now, I guess, I don't know if retired is the word, semi-retired. I don't expect to see him in the league again. Those are big blows. Those are big blows early in the season. We have a number of retirements already this year that have drastically changed the shape of the league and changed the shape of these rosters, and that's a big deal. One thing, I guess I was going to wait until after we had Pinnell on, but again, talking to a number of people, Matt Toske is back. I was told flat out he was the best player in camp this weekend, that he was ridiculously good, that he has everything it takes to probably start for this New York Lizards team. And, okay, that's a player that I didn't expect. That's an out-of-nowhere guy coming in who, not out of nowhere, but he didn't play last season. The former MVP stepping up, probably the last of the true finishers, you know, the older finishers in the league. And, you know, it'll be great to see him again. I'm excited to see what he can do and see what he brings to this team because, I mean, he had his best seasons teaming with Rabel. Now he's just got even more weapons around him, you know, we could have a surprise player that, I mean, I think, does he already win comeback player of the year having not played last season?
That is a big question, and the loss of Pizer is going to be huge. The emergence of Poske is going to be big, and we're going to talk to Rob about exactly the impact that he thinks he's going to make, because he is a huge impact player for this team. If he's playing at that level, if he's playing on the level of some of the guys that they brought in training camp, look out, world, because the New York Lizards are going to be a formidable force moving forward. One thing that I wanted to ask you, Joe, kind of moving towards just a general sense of this league, is Tom and I spent the past 2 weeks going over each team and the more interesting training camp battles and kind of how we think that each team's going to go. We talked to people like Scott Ratliff last week about our down predictions on the Cannons, and we've kind of gone through each team. I just kind of want to ask, like, what's your general sense of some of these training camp battles, and which ones do you think are the biggest highlights as far as things that you're looking forward to when week one rolls around, as far as people who are going to be on these rosters and maybe some of the people who might shockingly be left off?
You look at these rosters, and for now, I think we're not going to see too many surprise players left off rosters. I think training camp doesn't really end once the first game of the season starts, because almost all of these teams besides New York and Charlotte are without three or four starting players because of NLL or college commitments, coaching college or coaching in high school. So I think the training camp battles sort of extend through April and the beginning of May, and these guys are going to have their four or five games to prove themselves, and it's going to be interesting to see who steps up and does that.
Tom, we've talked the past 2 weeks about all these training camps, and I feel like out of the three of us, I'm probably the least connected out of everybody, but you two seem to have a really good ear as far as what the players think. We've talked about Toske making an impact on the New York team. Who else have you heard who's made a huge impact on one of the training camps and who might surprise some people as far as being an emerging presence or a resurgence as far as the talent is concerned, as far as what you've heard from training camp so far?
We talked a little bit about him last week, but my good friend Zach Palmer is going to get a chance to get a run with Ohio week one. Obviously, with rosters the way they are, nobody makes a lot of promises beyond that. But finally getting a chance to see him in an MLL uniform, filling in that left side of the attack role, excuse me, a position that Logan Shush is a big question mark on. I don't know how many games he's going to be available for. I'm hearing it's potentially less than half. I don't know how much of a commitment Ohio will make to him, with him not making a large commitment to them. That's a difficult situation. It's an unfortunate situation. But Zach Palmer is going to fill in that role early. He brings an incredibly different skill set to that position that Logan Shush doesn't have. And it's not better. It's not worse. It's just different. I look forward to seeing him. Obviously, I have a personal connection with Logan, and so that would normally come first. But I'm excited to see what Zach can do, and excited to see what Ohio can do. That defense still got some questions. We talked to Karolunas. I think he's a huge addition for them. Still got questions on the defensive end, but everybody I talked to in Charlotte camp said camp was great. Lots of team building, lots going on, lots of youth, lots of energy. And the Boston guys, talked to a number of them, and they had nothing but good things to say. That is now a first-class, upper echelon, top of the MLL organization with amazing locker rooms, amazing support staff, using Gillette's practice facility, using Gillette Stadium to practice on for training camp. If you're a New Englander, I don't know how much better it can be for you than being able to do that kind of thing in that environment.
I think Scott Ratliff took his stick and put it to your throat at some point in time after talking with him, because it seemed like that 2 weeks ago we were really down on Boston. Now
I didn't say they're going to win games. I didn't come out and say I was wrong about my prediction. I'm sticking with that prediction. I'm sorry. I'll apologize to Scott. I'll apologize to Will Manny, Craig Bunker, all guys who I'm great friends with, who I've taken a lot of crap from over this prediction. But at the same time, I do like the way that that franchise is heading, but there might be a brighter day tomorrow than there is today.
Well, tell you what, in case those guys are listening, I just want to make sure that everyone knows that you are still sticking with that prediction and that maybe I should post your home number on a couple of websites and see what they have to say to you in private. Moving on, though, Joe, some of these teams, you mentioned the fact that Charlotte and New York seem to have a pretty big advantage whenever it comes to not having players play on the indoor circuit. We have a couple minutes before Rob comes on. Which teams do you think have the most opportunity for some players? Not necessarily the specific players, but which teams do you think have an opportunity for certain unknown guys to possibly make roster spots? Because every year we seem to find someone who in the first couple weeks of the season makes a name for themselves and seems to stick with the team a little longer than maybe we thought.
You know, I think one team you have to look at right away is Chesapeake, because obviously they always bring in a ton of talent in the supplemental draft. They're, for most players, the easiest team to travel to and commit to if you're on that fringe practice squad, not dressing on game day. If you're at that caliber, if you're going to do that for any team, you might as well do it for a team that's within an hour drive away. So you look at a lot of these guys, they get a bunch of NLL midfielders. They get Kevin Crowley, just got traded to, I believe, the Toronto Rock are the top team in the East. So they're poised to go deep into the NLL season. You have Joe Walters on the Rochester Nighthawks. They're always in contention for the title. And this is just a deep midfield that I'm not sure any of those guys are going to really displace Crowley and Walters, because Crowley is 2 years removed from an MVP season, 1 year removed, and Walters is one of the best players in the world. But you do have some young guys on that team at midfield who can get some runs, like, I mean, Sam Bradman, and then you have some older guys like Matt Strebel, who kind of bounced around the league a little bit last year, found some time with Boston late. But if he's coming to tryouts, if he's coming to the training camp, Coach Cottle tweeted out that he looked good. Him and Kyle Sweeney were there. Paul Carcaterra asked, and he tweeted reply to yes if they were handed out Social Security. But who knows? I mean, some of those guys, like Strebel or Bradman or maybe Joe Von Miller, guys that might not really get a chance on any other team, could get a chance on Chesapeake just because they have so many indoor guys.
Can you even say Joe Von Miller on the radio?
Yeah, I said it. He's going to get his shot.
Tom, leave Joe Von alone. Now the thing I really want to talk about with you, Tom, real quick before we get Rob on in a couple minutes, is you seem to be connected to a lot of the players who, like Logan, Marcus Holman, and a couple guys on Charlotte, who I think we both talked to a little bit. And one thing about a lot of these younger teams is they seem to have a lot of fun in training camp. Now, we're going to ask Marcus about this in a little bit. But how big do you think that is, to have a fun training camp? Because I don't know about you guys, but whenever I think of training camp, I always think about football training camps, people drinking out of the hoses that have a bunch of holes poked in them, and it's a little intense. And some of these training camps, while being intense and while getting their jobs done, it seems like a lot of these guys are having a lot of fun being back with a lot of their friends, basically. And so, Tom, how big do you think it is having a training camp for some of these teams and having it be a little bit more, I don't know if lackadaisical is the word, I don't know if relax is the word, but still, it seems like they're all having a lot more fun than it's been the past couple of years, and that could also be just social media talking. What do you make about that?
It has to be. It has to be for fun. I mean, you're not going to make an NFL team where bottom line salary is $390,000 a year. These guys are playing for next to nothing. They're playing for a chance to go hang out with your best friends 13, 14 weekends a year, get to hang out with your buddies, get to travel to a couple different cities and do a number of different things for, you know, for fun. They're looking to have a good time and do it at the highest level. The games last a lot less than the weekends last. These guys are traveling all weekend, hanging out all weekend long. They're having fun, and 2 to 3 hours of that they're playing a game. They don't do it for the money. There's maybe 5 players in the world that play lacrosse full time for a living. All these guys do a lot of stuff on the outside to get it done and to pay the bills. And so if you don't enjoy it, if you don't love it, if you don't live it, why do it?
Well, speaking of guys who love it, live it, and everything else, I'm really thrilled to announce Rob Pennell joining us. And, Rob, really thank you for your time on a Tuesday evening. And I'm going to jump right into it. I got one question for you. I'm going to jump and throw it right over to Tom. I think, first off, I'm going to just take on the elephant in the room. Max Seabolt was obviously one of the guys that you were closest to when you guys played together, and now he's playing for a different team. How different was it throughout training camp not having him around, and exactly what's going on as far as not having the guy you were closest to on the team be around throughout a training camp in a new season with a bunch of new players and high expectations?
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me. You know, it's only been one weekend, so you know, I don't think you'll see the full effect of not having Max around just yet. You know, Max, you know, not only is he a great player and he does things on the field that, in my opinion, no one can replicate as far as the all-around player that he is, from offense to wins of face-offs to defense, just his athleticism, his explosiveness, just the, you know, the player and person that he is on the field is just something tough to duplicate, and he's just that way off the field as well. You know, he's friends with everybody on the team. He's a guy that everybody loves to have around the locker room. Everyone can trust. Everyone can go up to and let them know how they're feeling and whatnot. And you know, being there that first weekend, a lot of guys asked how he was. You know, if I had talked to him and how he's doing up in Boston, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and guys care about Max. You know, they've known him for a number of years. He's been, you know, he grew up on Long Island. He's been very loyal, you know, to the Long Island crowd and to the Lizards. So, you know, guys care about him and appreciate what he's done. At the same time, you know, there comes a time when you have to move on and, you know, part your separate ways. And despite what, you know, Max wanted to do, you know, or what plans he had, you know, he's up in Boston now, and it's a new start for him. I know he's excited about it, and he's going to make the best of his opportunity. So it certainly was different, but at the same time, you know, yeah, it's not like we didn't replace him with anyone. You know, we did get Paul Rabel, and, you know, he's obviously a tremendous talent and has proven that he's, you know, one of the best players in the league from the time that he started. So it was great having him around for the first weekend, and Paul fit right in and did his job and was welcomed by everybody. So it was, I think, a pretty smooth transition. But no matter how hard you try, you know, I don't think there's ever, you know, going to be that guy that will replace a Max Seabold type of player in New York or anywhere.
Hey, Rob, it's Joe Keegan. So you're talking about Paul Rabel. Obviously, you guys are replacing Max with a great player. And one of the things Paul's talked about since the trade to New York is how playing with you, he's going to have the opportunity to work on his off-ball game, which he keeps saying is one of the things that is one of the weaker points of his game, I guess. I'm not sure weak is the right word for it, because he does have a good off-ball game. He just doesn't really have the chance to play off-ball much. Is there any specific aspect of your game that you've been working on improving?
You know, I wouldn't nail down any specific part. You know, I've been working on my game since college to become an all-around player, you know, from being a feeder in high school to then having to become more of a scorer in college and doing both of them. You know, I think the funny thing is that a lot of people see me playing the MLL and they look at me as a scorer, and the guy that goes to the cage and shoots a lot. When, you know, statistically, you know, in college, you know, I have, you know, a ton more assists than I do goals. So, and I was the same in high school. So I've generally been a feeder over the course of my career. And it's funny kind of how that has changed or how people think it's changed. But, you know, I just work on, you know, most to improve my physical fitness and strength and conditioning. I've seen the biggest improvement in my game when I'm in the best shape and when I'm physically fit to take on, you know, the ML defensemen that are the best in the world and the toughest to go against. So, you know, when I can handle their, you know, their physicality and their toughness, then that's when I find myself in you know, in my best shape possible. So that's kind of what I focus on in the offseason. And, you know, I know the skills, you know, through training camp and through the first weeks of the season will come into their own.
Right, so speaking of physical defensemen, that's one of the things that your coach, Joe Spolino, was talking about way back at the beginning of this offseason. He was looking to bring in, you guys got Luke Dupree back from injury, there's Bruiser out of Duke, and just recently traded for Brian Spolino, Coach Joe's brother. How has it been? I know it's only been a week of training camp, but what is this defense like? It's obviously a different identity, losing Brian Karalunis and bringing in a couple more physical guys.
Yeah, you know, but Dupree wasn't there, so, you know, I can't speak much on that front. But we did have, you know, Joe Fletcher there who, you know, he's as good as advertised. He put him up there with the best of them. He's an unbelievable talent. Obviously a big body, but he's got great feet, smart with his stick, and he's, you know, I think – as far as ground ball goes, you know, I'd put him up there with the best of them. You know, if you start off with him, then you got a guy like Stephen Holmes who, you know, despite being a little bit older, you know, he's physical, he's quick, you know, he's a tremendous athlete, and he did a great job this past weekend. And then, you know, kind of rounded off with Brian Spolino at that coast defense who, you know, he's one of those guys that you love to have on your team and you love having him around because he's as good a teammate as it gets. And he's been around, and he knows what it takes to win in this league, so he'll be the better in that defense, teaching those guys, you know, what is necessary to win. So I think we've got it all from, you know, from physicality to finesse. You know, our defense kind of covers all that. You add in our poles, Kyle Hartzell, and then a guy like Dupree and some of the other guys that we have out there. You know, we have a star-studded defense, and obviously capping off with Drew Adams in the goal, who, in my opinion, doesn't get any better than that. So it's a great start there, and you know, I'm really looking forward to watching those guys compete all year long.
Hey Rob, it's Tom. When you look at Brian Spolino, having gone against him for a couple of years now, and now he's on your team, is that like a relief?
It definitely is a relief. You know, it's not that he covers me, but you know he's always there, and you know, as I say to people, he's one of those guys that you hate playing against, but you love him when he's on your team. And that's exactly what he is. You know, he's a guy that changes the course of a game. He changes the mindset of certain players. You know, if he can get inside their head or, you know, whatever it is, he's physical, he's talkative, and he's also talented, obviously, and he's won a number of championships. So he knows what he's doing. And I'd rather have him on our team any day of the week and be playing against them. So that's exactly, you know, you couldn't have said it any better. You know, playing against them from the first time you get in the field, he's there. So now I'm glad I can watch him doing it. I will be watching him doing that to other people.
And the general question here is, you know, you're one of the two players in the world who has his own line of gear. You've got all the expectations in the world. Now you're playing for the team that's arguably the favorite to run the table, to win it all. How do you manage the expectations?
You got to take it one game at a time. You know, not even one game at a time. You got to take it one practice at a time. You know, one day of training camp at a time. You know, it's sports. You know, they want, you know, a good story, you know, something to talk about. And obviously I understand all that. But, you know, I'm here to playing for the Wizards, playing the MLO, do one thing only, and that's to win games. You know, I want to win a championship, but I know at the same time I can't be looking forward to that. I got to be looking forward to what I can do to make myself the best player that I can be so that I can make my team, you know, the best that they can be. And I think we had a great first week of training camp, and we'll take the positives from that. We'll also look at what we did wrong and, you know, what we can improve on, and we'll move forward to this weekend, and we'll build upon it then. But we can't look too far ahead. You know, if we start talking about that championship, start talking about August, that's when we're going to get ourselves into trouble. You know, we need to know that we have a talented team. Yeah, we have a very talented team. But if we don't do our jobs in training camp, in practice every day, and take it week by week, we're never going to get to where we want to go. And I think that's very important. And something that I've learned, you know, through college and now into the pros, that despite how talented you are, if you don't take it slowly and take it one day at a time, one opponent at a time, that you can get ahead of yourself. So I know with the veterans that we have on our team and the maturity and guys that have been around, that, you know, we'll do that. And, you know, hoping that we could just win our first game of the season and then get going from there.
Rob, back to James just for one more question, because I feel like every time you get two of the best players in any sport on the same team at one time, which obviously is what's happening in New York with yourself and Paul, if there's 20 seconds left, game one, and you guys are bringing the ball to the field, who gets the ball for that last shot? If you need a last-second goal at this point in time, do you want the ball? Like, I don't really know how this is going to work, because it seems like this is Dwayne Wade in his prime with LeBron. It seems like Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen. We haven't seen this in a while in the MLL. Do you want the ball, or are you going to be the facilitator? How is that going to work in the last 20 seconds of the game?
Do I want the ball? I always want the ball. Especially when the game is on the line, right? I rather have the ball on my stick than anyone else. And, you know, that's no disrespect to Paul or anything. I'm sure he would give you the same exact answer. So, you know, ideally, I would take the ball and feed Paul on a cut on that off game, on that off ball game that he's been working on, and we'll win the game. You know, I don't know. You know, I want the ball because that's how I am. That's how I've been my whole career. If our coach and our team thinks it's best that Paul has the ball, and that's how we're going to win the game, then so be it. Let's just win the game. You know. That's all that would be on my mind at that point. But, you know, I'm sure during the season at some point it's going to come down to that decision. So you'll be able to get that answer for yourself when that time comes.
That's awesome. We'll tell you what, best of luck throughout the course of training camp and throughout the course of the season. We wish you nothing but continued success. And like I said, hopefully you guys do great, and we're all rooting for you guys. And like I said, Rob Pinnell, thanks once again for coming on, and we look forward to talking with you soon.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
And with that being said, we're going to welcome immediately Marcus Holman in the conversation. Marcus, welcome to the show, first off. And first thing that I want to ask you is, this is a training camp where you guys have a little bit more of an expectation as far as what the team did last year and how you guys performed. How much more fun has it been with a little bit more, you know, experienced players? Because you guys have had a lot of rookies these past couple of years, and now you guys are a little bit more experienced, a little bit more seasoned. And has it been more fun experience being in Bear Davis' system for at least a little while longer than your first season?
Absolutely. Yeah. First off, just want to say thanks to you guys for having me on tonight. I appreciate what you guys do and your coverage of the sport and trying to grow the game. So, just wanted to get that out of the way early on. But to answer your question, I mean, yes. It's definitely a more comfortable feeling. You know, last year we didn't really know what to expect. Obviously, we brought in Kyle and Peter, and, you know, Tom Schreiber joined us halfway through the season. And we still kind of didn't, in my opinion, get that chemistry going until the last couple weeks into the season when we put that run together, which was pretty special. But I think this year, you know, we have guys that are returning. We have guys that are comfortable. And I'm sure this is going to sound cliche, and you've probably heard it 1,000 times, but, you know, the MLL is about chemistry, because there is only one ball, and no matter how many, you know, to wartime winners you have on your team or All-Americans, you know, if they're not working well together or playing well together, then you're not going to have success as a team. So we have a great group of guys, you know, offensively that, you know, want to share the ball and want to, you know, our team first guys. And it's been a really – training camp went really well, and I'm definitely excited for that first game against New York.
Hey, Marcus, it's Joe Keegan. I was listening to Noah Sharfman and Bear Davis's podcast the other day, and they were joking. They were absolutely right about it. It's something that I noticed but never really thought about much. They were joking about how you are the person who celebrates everyone else's goals harder than anyone on the field. Is that like a running joke? Do you guys talk about that in the locker room at all?
I don't, you know, not really. I feel like, you know, after, you know, a couple of our games, I'll go back and look at some of the pictures, and I feel like I'm always, like, jumping up in the air and trying to, like, dogpile guys after, you know, a mundane goal in, like, the second quarter or something. it's just kind of the way I am. It's just kind of the way I play. You know, I love this sport, and I've been playing it, you know, since I was 5 years old, and it's honestly, you know, one of the most important things in my life, and just every time I'm out of the field for me is just a blessing, and I just try to play that way and just bring as much energy as I can to my team and my teammates, and so I get a little excited after we score.
Yeah, because I mean, I think everybody noticed that. I think that was, besides the high scoring offense, a lot of the appeal of the machine last year, and you guys had obviously great chemistry. You had that cover of inside lacrosse with the oil up, that offensive unit. You guys, I mean, I think your behavior was contagious, because Baum and Harrison and even Phil Stanwyck by the end of the year were jumping up and down after goals too. And I mean, now that Noah and Barrett sort of traced the route to you, it makes a little bit of sense, because UNC goes crazy after every goal still. Joey Sankey and Jimmy Bitter.
Yeah. Just, you know, in my couple years playing this sport, not couple, probably over close to 20, you know, you find out little things like that, and energy is contagious. You know, whether it be positive energy or negative energy, that's kind of up to you. But, you know, if I heard a great quote from Urban Meyer that, you know, I kind of has stuck with me for the past 3 or 4 years. And he said, you know, whether you're out on the practice field or it's game day, you know, be an energy giver, not an energy taker. You know, give off energy to your teammates around you, your team. You know, don't suck the life out of them by, you know, being a self-centered person and only caring if you score, you know, how many points you want to score. So that's just kind of the way I play, and the environment I want to create in our locker room.
Nice. I like it. It's like I said, fun to watch and contagious for the guys on the team and for the fans. So you were talking to James earlier about chemistry, and one of the things I sort of noticed between your first year in the league and your second year, in 2013, the machine offense was a lot different without Kyle Harrison, Peter Baum, Tom Schreiber, like you mentioned. You guys were sort of running like almost 5 or 6 natural attackmen at the same field at the same time. So you played a little bit, maybe higher on the field above the wings than you typically would as an attackman. And in a way, it kind of seems like it prepared you for your offense this year, where you guys are initiating from up top and then you're popping the crease and making life hell for defenses for that second slide. And it kind of, I don't know if it developed your range, or is that something that you had at UNC, or do you think that first year, 2013, was a good learning experience from that perspective?
My sophomore year at North Carolina, I played midfield. We had, you know, abundance of attackmen, and, you know, after kind of the fall and going through practice, you know, I felt kind of comfortable playing up top. And truthfully, that experience in college, you know, kind of lended itself towards some of the success I had my rookie year, by playing midfield. And truthfully, it's just helped over, you know, develop my overall IQ of the sport, because I think you see the field from a different angle. Obviously, attacking up top, you can see kind of how teams slide. You can read defenses a little bit differently. So I do think it has definitely benefited myself and just my overall game. So it was a good experience. I'm definitely more comfortable playing attack and being, you know, around the goal. But I'd like to think that, you know, if need be, I could, you know, bump up top and take a few shifts out of the midfield.
Hey, Marcus, it's Tom. You know, obviously I tweeted out my extreme expectations for you on the season of winning the MVP. But do you set expectations for yourself and for your teammates and just expect them to meet them? Do you expect certain things from your teammates?
Definitely. I mean, I have you know, high expectations for myself. I do think it's important to set individual goals. However, if they're not related to the team success and, you know, the team winning the final game of the season isn't your number one priority, then, you know, that's probably not, you know, in the best interest of your teammates and your organization. So, yeah, I mean, I take my, you know, off-season training very seriously, and, you know, being named captain today of the team was special and important to me, and I'm excited for this group, and I think, you know, we definitely have the keys to make some noise in this league. Obviously, we know that, you know, we're no longer the new kids on the block. You know, we kind of have a target on our back, and I think we're excited for that challenge and opportunities that will arise from it.
And you got a shot with the Swarm at training camp, obviously making their practice squad. How was that experience, and how is that going to work into your game this year?
Yeah, that was an awesome experience. I'm very grateful to Minnesota and, you know, the coaching staff and all the players up there in the 3 weeks that I was with them for training camp. It was a, you know, definitely a new experience for me. Obviously, you know, growing up playing field lacrosse, you don't have too much box opportunities in America. It's definitely growing, but, you know, you didn't have those opportunities as a kid. And, you know, I must say, of the 3 weekends I was there, I definitely felt my stick work improve. You know, you're playing along guys like Miles Thompson and Callum Crawford and Shane Jackson, all guys who are very skilled flick scorers, and you pick up little nuances from them that, you know, can help you in box and, more importantly, help you, you know, outdoor when the goal looks 10 times as big and, you know, you just kind of develop a little bit of some more offensive IQ. So, yeah, I think it's helped me out. You know, it teaches you a little bit about patience, finishing around the cage and stuff like that. So, I'm thankful, definitely thankful for them.
And I'm going to put you on the spot. Pick one. You get one of the three, an MLL MVP, a UNC national title, or an MLL title.
Oh, I get one of those three? Can't I have all three? I'm definitely supporting North Carolina this season, and I really hope the best for them. You know, they seem like they are definitely moving in the right direction as a program, and I hope they do end up making, you know, the Final Four weekend. And for myself, you know, individually, I've achieved almost, you know, every individual award I could ask for. So to answer your question and to beat around the bush, the answer would be an MLL championship for the Ohio Machine.
Well, Marcus, to bring you – this is James again, by the way – to bring you back to the collegiate scene, because we've been talking about the UNC-Duke rivalry and with March Madness going on, just share a couple words about exactly what that rivalry means to you guys as far as lacrosse is concerned, because I feel like that rivalry gets overshadowed by basketball, because everyone knows those two teams meet in the Dean Dome, they meet in Cameron, and I just want to know from a person – I'm a Duke fan, and so I want you to be very, very concise about what the Carolina experience meant to you and everything. But exactly what did that rivalry mean to you guys coming up and moving forward?
Oh, I mean, it's honestly, it's everything down in Chapel Hill and Durham. You know, for me personally, the lacrosse piece of it was tough going because Duke kind of has, you know, even including the past weekend, the win that Carolina had, Duke has really dominated that rivalry in the past, you know, 7 or 8 years. So, you know, it's funny actually looking back on my college career, and I've told this to a couple of people, the first game I ever played against Duke, you know, we won, North Carolina won my freshman year, and then the last game I ever played against Duke, I won my senior year. Every game in between that time, I lost. So I think my final record against Duke was, you know, maybe 2-5 or 2-4. But, I mean, it's intense. You know that, you know, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. We don't generally get along with Duke players, you know, while we're in college. You know, I've certainly, you know, made kind of new relationships post-college with guys like, you know, Jordan Wolf and David Lawson and such. But, you know, while you're at school, it's intense on game day. And, you know, I was definitely glad to see Carolina pull out the win this past weekend. And, you know, maybe the tide is turning a little bit in that rivalry. But until, you know, somebody else can hold up a championship on Memorial Day weekend, like Duke has been doing for the past, you know, 3 out of the past 4 years, you know, you have to give the nod to them in the rivalry.
Well, Marcus, we all appreciate you coming on. Best of luck throughout the course of the season, and I'm sure Tom and I will see you because we both are going to be in Ohio for you guys' home opener, which should be amazing. We're all looking forward to it. And continued success, and we look forward to talking to you soon. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it, and oil up.
And that's Marcus Ullman coming on with us once again, the Pro Lacrosse Face-Off. And we're going to wait a couple seconds because we're expecting Chad Wiedmeyer to come on in the next couple minutes. And the thing that I kind of want to touch on with you guys is real quick, just some of your initial impressions on the interview with Rob Pinnell, because it seemed like there were a couple things that were interesting with him as far as the Max Seabold question, which was the big thing that we all discussed previously. And so just to kind of recap exactly any sort of glimmers of any sort of insight that he might have illustrated to the New York Lizards training camp, Joe, did you hear anything that you really thought was a big deal?
I'm not sure there's anything to be concerned about. I mean, he's played with Max almost his entire career post-high school. I mean, at Cornell he played with him, and then with the Lizards. And I think it's more to be taken as that Max Seabold is a great teammate than the Lizards are going to be struggling without him, because it's tough to replace a captain like that and a player of that caliber, but they don't really have a problem of talent or leadership on that team. I think the Lizards brought in the best player in the world, Paul Rabil, and it's just going to maybe take a little bit of time for them to develop that same chemistry that they had last year, but the Lizards are going to be fine.
Well, with that being said, let's introduce Chad Wiedmeyer, who is gracious enough to be our third guest on the show. And, Chad, once again, thank you for your time. And this is James to start off. I'm just going to ask you one quick question, then we'll move along. Scott Ratliff was on with us last week. Tom and I have a season-long bet about over-unders. And even though Scott might not tell you this publicly, I took you guys at over the 4.5 win mark. Tom was very solidly under 4.5 wins for you guys. What makes you think that you guys can possibly make me look like a really awesome guy and someone who can pretty much see in the future? Because I think you guys have the potential to be a little bit more of a surprise team than most.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely hope we get more than 4 wins this year. If you're not shooting for an undefeated season, I don't think you really should be playing in the league. Yeah, I mean, we obviously just had our first training camp, and we obviously have a ton of new parts. You know, a lot of different faces, and pretty much, you know, entirely, you know, I guess you could say almost a whole new face or same organization, but, you know, playing in a new place, just a lot of changes. But I wasn't surprised. Now, I expected it, but I was very impressed with the energy and kind of the urgency, you know, of the team. We're definitely on the younger side, but, you know, we're not a team full of rookies. We're, you know, a team full of younger guys who've had a couple years under our belt, know how the league works, you know, the ins and outs and the differences from the college game. So I don't know how to convince you guys. I'll let our actions on the field do the talking, but I had a great feeling after just our first weekend, and I'm very excited to get back up there this Saturday and, you know, being able to use the Patriots facilities, you know, just being kind of walking in kind of the same air as, you know, some of one of the greatest teams, possibly, you know, one of the best dynasties, I guess you could, you know, technically argue within the NFL. It gets gives you a little bit of goosebumps to be not only on their field, but I thought it was really, really a cool feeling to be in their practice facility and in their bubble this past Friday night. So, you know, we're just getting ready for the season and taking it step by step of, you know, establishing, you know, what our new identity is as a team and figuring it out, you know, at one step at a time.
Hey, Chad, it's Joe Keegan. So obviously you were traded from the Ohio Machine to Boston. This is your first year on the team. How much of the learning curve of a new MLL defense is based on getting to know your teammates and your goalie and their tendencies versus how much of it is about you guys getting on page with the coach's scheme?
I think it goes both ways, but, you know, having played in the league now and this being my fourth season, you know, anybody who's made it to playing MLL understands, you know, kind of team defenses and philosophies and concepts and real strategies. So, you know, meshing with the coaches and figuring out what sort of a defense we want to play in and, you know, what kind of, you know, systems we want to run, I think that will come together quickly because, you know, everyone's a very intelligent player. But I think, like, to go with your first point, the biggest thing is learning, you know, what, you know, the guys that you're playing with and by your side and learning your goalie's tendencies. You know, some goalies are great with, you know, time and room shots. Some aren't. Some are okay with, you know, mid-room shots. You kind of gel and figure out what everyone's good at. You know, when's a good time to slide? When's a good time to maybe hold off and let a guy go to work? I'd say that's probably going to take a little bit more time than, you know, gelling with our coaches. We can all get on the same page in terms from a scheme standpoint pretty quickly. You know, defense, that's the great thing about defense in lacrosse is it's kind of an international language. It's really the biggest thing is kind of agreeing on what's the word you're going to call for one defense and what's the word you're going to call for another defense. Everyone runs kind of the same systems with a different couple of wrinkles or two, but at the end of the day, it's pretty much, you know, an international language. So it was a pretty good weekend, you know, getting out there to play with, you know, Scott McWilliams, who I played against in high school a long time ago. He went to Mountain Lakes and I went to Del Barton up in northern New Jersey. So it's good to be playing with another, you know, Jersey strong lacrosse player. And guys like, you know, Ratliff, I watched him play all through his college career and, you know, been following him professionally now as well. And, you know, it's awesome to see how great of a leader he is as well. He's very vocal and I really like his poise, you know, in and out of the huddle. And I'm excited to be playing with, you know, Mitch. He'll be coming back from indoor soon enough. And I'm excited to be playing with Brody Merrill again. I mean, I can't ask any guy in the league who's ever played with Brody. He's as class act as it gets. And he is one of the most fierce and intense competitors I've ever been around. So I played with him my rookie year in Hamilton, played with him for two seasons in Philadelphia and indoor. And, you know, it's funny, he told me when I got traded from Ohio and stopped playing for Philadelphia, he told me, he's like, you know, I have a feeling our paths will cross again. So sure enough, Tate had it, and I'm going to be playing with Brody again. So pretty excited about that, and excited about all the different, you know, kind of offerings that our defense can bring to the table and hopefully get it done collectively as a unit.
Yeah, so one of the things about all those guys, most of those guys that you just mentioned, I guess maybe besides Mitch Belisle, all of them are naturally long, thick midfielders. And one of the things that the Cannons did a lot last year was give one of those guys, whether it was Mitch Belisle or Eric Martin or even at times Scott McWilliams, they'd give him a short stick and have him match up with a close attackman so that they kind of let a couple of their LSMs run. Does that change the way you play as a close defender at all, it, having a short stick next to you and having the sort of having the poles more on the perimeter?
Yeah, I mean, we're not sure yet, you know, how we're gonna address that this year. Like, obviously, we do have, you know, a bunch of guys who can definitely play pole, which, you know, I think in this league is a huge plus. You know, anytime you have guys in the field on the back end who are comfortable pushing transition, that's great. Because, I mean, as you guys know from watching the league, transition's key. If you can get something going in transition, that's huge. So that's great for us. And, you know, in terms of, you know, playing in a 6-on-6 defense where you've got maybe a close defenseman playing with a short stick, yeah, obviously it's gonna change the way you kind of play defense around that. You got to be a little bit more matchup conscientious of any time a short stick's covering an attackman. You know, even if it is a crease guy who's maybe a little bit more of an off-ball player, you know, they have that ability to get their hands free a little bit more often. But,
right.
Yeah, I mean, to answer your question there, you got to be a little bit more aware, have a little bit more heightened sense of awareness. But, you know, we'll figure that out when we get there. But I think it's a great plus to have so many guys in the back end that are, you know, feel very comfortable, and not only comfortable, but are very successful in pushing transition. So I'm excited for it.
Right, yeah. Transition offense is, I mean, when you talk to almost anyone around the league, they'll tell you that that's one of the most important things, getting shots, quality shots early in the shot clock. I know, you look at Denver, they've been phenomenal in the regular season, just got their first championship, but it seems like they've been dominating with that system where they like to keep at least one guy on the field who's going to stay and play, whether it's Drew Snyder or Justin Pennington, or a couple of years ago it was Justin Turry. Do you see the Cannons running more two-way guys like that? I know last week on the show, Scott Ratliff touched on Brent Adams playing fantastic in training camp so far. Is there anybody who stood out as sort of that dual threat?
Yeah, I mean, Brent definitely. It's the first time I've gotten to play with him, but the dude is just ridiculously fast, and his shot on the run is a pretty beautiful thing to watch. So, yeah, I mean, he's definitely be somebody we're going to be looking at push both ways. But, you know, I mean, you hear it in college all the time for college lacrosse players. You just don't see, you know, those do-it-all middies anymore. So to have somebody who have guys in the field right away that can push the ball down the field right away and look to get opportunities in that and not have to worry about, you know, obviously you have a shot clock now in the MLL. You know, not to say that we have it now, but dealing with the shot clock, you know, if you're spending time subbing, by the time you get guys in the field, you don't have very much time to set up your offense and set up an opportunity. And at times that can rush you and force you to take, you know, not great shots and end up resulting in turnovers. And soon enough, you're playing defense once again. So, you know, with the added shot clock, it's really important to be able to push transition. And, I mean, to go with your point last year about talking about Denver in the past couple years and pushing transition, I don't know if you guys remember the game. It was our last regular season game versus Denver with Ohio. I think the final score was something like 24-25. I can't tell you how many times, you know, we either had a possession on the offensive end and they would be coming down on not a 6-on-5, but maybe a 6-on-4. I think they even had a couple 6-on-3s. And, you know, they're just relentless in the way that they approach the transition game. So, I mean, they won a championship last year. There's something to be said about that. So,
Hey, Chad, it's Tom. James kind of threw me under the bus to begin with, but I'll work with that. But you got your open training camp with a new team. It's the first year for you where you're not coming off of a season at the start of the season. And you open everything up, and you're at Gillette Stadium, and you're in the Patriots Dome. I'm not sure what the name of it is, but how is that whole experience and everything been?
Yeah, I actually was thinking about that this past weekend. It's kind of nice to be able to, you know, jump into right into, you know, outdoor without having to transition off the indoor league. I mean, as you guys know, I've played a ton of sports throughout my life, and I'll still say that indoor lacrosse is the roughest and most taxing sport on your body that there is. So it's definitely nice to come into training camp feeling completely fresh and as ready as I physically can be. And it's very nice to get a real training camp under my belt this year. You know, in the years past, it's kind of been, right, indoor season's over. You know, you have a Friday night game. If you found out you didn't make the playoffs, you know, sometimes they have contingency plans to literally be flown out right after the game and play the next day for our outdoor teams. I remember Michael Manley and Joel White had to do that for a game against for Rochester. I think it was last year. So it's very tough on your body to go through two full seasons like that, not only on your body physically, but definitely mentally as well. You know, it's a grind to go, you know, work 5 days a week at your normal job and then immediately hop on a plane and go play all weekend and come back that Sunday. It kind of seems like you never really get a chance to breathe, and especially going from indoor to outdoor season. That process can be taxing on your body and your mind. So it's been great just to get back on the field. I live here in New York City. It's nice to finally be out on a field with plenty of space to run in whatever direction I feel like. Sometimes you can feel a little bit boxed in here in the city, but it's definitely a little bit different this year, getting right back into it. And, you know, obviously all the decision-making, you know, the timing and kind of the style of the way you play from indoor versus outdoor, definitely a lot different in terms of tactics and strategies. So it's nice to go right into a season having my mind wrapped around the outdoor game from the start.
And speaking of the mental side, I guess my next question kind of relates to that. The MLL is an offensive league. It really is. The two-point shot, the shot clock, it's geared towards fast-paced, high-octane offense. As a defender, you know, you alluded to that 25-24 game. How do you shake off the last play? I mean, if you get beat on a dodge or on a slide, how do you shake off the last play when the next play is 30 seconds away?
Yeah, I hear you on that. I mean, two-point shot, grippy balls, and being able to run and dive through the crease, it's definitely an offensive player's league. I won't disagree with that. But it's great. You know, it's what the fans want to see. Fans don't want to go to see a 6-5 game. I would definitely agree from a spectator standpoint that a 25-24 game last year was probably a blast for them to watch. For me personally, it was a little bit of a pride check for me, given I've never given up that many goals in one game of my life. But, you know, you ask any high-level athlete, it doesn't matter what happens the play before. If you don't have the mental ability to kind of shake it off and say, doesn't matter what happened 5 seconds ago, and what are we going to do now? Kind of the way a goalie has to approach a game. You know, as soon as a goal goes in, you bring it as a unit. You talk about what happened. You talk about what you're going to do the next time to fix that problem, and you move on. Because if you don't, like you said, within a couple of seconds, you're going to be in a position where the offense is ready to score, and you're not living in the moment. You're already thinking about what happened the last play, and that's not going to help you. So you just really got to have amnesia when you're on the field and be able to just shake it off immediately and move on to the next one. And you can worry about the little dent it's going to put on your pride after the game. I mean, the 24-25 game, I was pretty mad at myself for the next week. But, you know, that's the great thing about playing athletics, is that there's always a next game to prove yourself and always in the next year to kind of, you know, you know, show the doubters that they're wrong. I had an excellent time last year with Ohio going into that season and really everybody doubting us because I think we pulled off, was it 2 or 3 wins the year before? And, you know, we made it to the playoffs and we were very close to making it to the finals. So, you know, you never know what's going to happen.
And another follow-up question, I guess, is, you know, you alluded to having played with a number of these guys before, and, you know, lacrosse is a really tight-knit community. But is there one guy on this Cannons team that you maybe haven't played with that you were looking forward to having as a teammate?
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward, and it's been fun so far as to playing with, you mentioned him before, is Scott Ratliff. You know, to play with somebody who can kind of pick up the ball right away and push it in transition from the defensive zone to the offensive zone. It's really fun to play in that. You know, me being a, you know, more specialized and, you know, kind of being a stopper, kind of just a strictly close defense guy. Kind of reminds me of the days when I was a freshman at Princeton. We had a defensive middie named Josh Lesko, who was a converted offensive middie. He was one of the top offensive middie recruits in the country when coming out of high school and college. And I just remember playing with him. And as soon as I ever got the ball, or as soon as somebody picked the ball up off the ground, I was automatically looking upfield to Josh, just pushing the ball at a ridiculous pace. And, you know, and a lot of times making transition opportunities come from that. So it's been fun to play with that with Scott so far. Only 3 practices under our belt, but it's pretty incredible to see what he can do off the ground. And when you add Brody Merrill to that equation too, I'm pretty excited to see what we can do this season.
Well, Chad, we really appreciate you coming on. Best of luck throughout the course of the season. Hopefully you guys do exceptionally well, just so I can stick it to Tom once again. I'm rooting for you guys. But either way, continued success, continued health on everything, and good luck in training camp. And hopefully you guys do great, and we really appreciate you coming on. We can't tell you enough about how much we think about you. And hopefully you guys do great throughout the course of the season.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys.
And that's Chad Wiedmeyer, our last of our 3 guests coming on today. And, I mean, goodness, like there's a lot of stuff going on with what these guys have been telling us. And Joe and Tom, like, I hate to do this to you guys, but we need to kind of transition real quick. We've got 30 minutes left, a little bit less than that. We got to get into a little bit of college talk, and we got to get into NLL trade deadline. And so real quick, the collegiate game, because, Joe, this is kind of your genre as far as what you do between the two of us. And I kind of just want to get real quick, your best performance of the past, I guess, the past weekend. I think that's kind of a good place to start. And, Tom, I'll go with you right after that. But right now, Joe, who do you think played – which team do you think displayed the most promise throughout the course this past weekend in the collegiate lacrosse? Just to kind of give a good roundup about the how the week went.
Yeah, well, I think the easy pick is Notre Dame. They knocked off the number one team. I said a few weeks ago when we were making our picks to win the ACC, I said I thought that Notre Dame would come through. They look so great on both ends of the fields. I mean, they're traditionally a dominant defense that hasn't changed. Matt Landis is one of the best cover guys in the country. And now they probably have, I think, a legit Tuar Time candidate in Matt Kavanaugh. And, I mean, Sergio Perkovic, Connor Doyle, Mikey Wynn, just guys all over the offensive end of the field that space the field well, dodge and re-dodge. And you look at that team, and I think the real X factor for them is the production they get from sort of non-traditional offensive positions. If they get Nick Ocello facing off, not every time. I mean, he probably takes about 50% of their face-offs, 12 to 13 a game, but he's chipping in like a goal and an assist every game. The kid is just a bull. He can dodge any short stick in the country. And then you get a guy like Jack Neer, probably, I mean, next to Will Haas, the best 2 defensive midfielders in the country. You can, I mean, debate that all you want, but
I think personally, Neer has a much better offensive game. He has attack roots from high school. He can invert. You saw him get the game-winning goal against Akeem Lecky. I mean, he went to his offhand. He scored the game-winning goal inverted against Lecky, who's a decent athlete, but apparently not the most technically sound defender. And Neer just pushes the cage with his right hand and gets the goal, his second of the game, to put Notre Dame ahead. So it's cliche to say the team that beat the number one team was the best performer of the weekend. But, again, I'm just really impressed with the ways that Notre Dame can beat you in, because there are a lot of teams that are good offensively and good defensively, but there are very few teams that can exploit your face-off specialist or your offensive midfielders with their face-off specialists and their D-middies.
Tom, there are a lot of good games over the past couple weeks. There are a lot of teams who solidified themselves as being more NCAA tournament viable than the past. I'm going to focus on this past week. Who submitted your performance that you were most impressed with throughout this past week in NCAA lacrosse?
You know, I really appreciate Joe for bringing up the Notre Dame Syracuse game, because there was really one player in that game who stood out as being far and away the best player on the field for most of the game, and that was Dylan Donahue. 7 goals against the best defense in the country. It's difficult to not point out how amazing that was. The team that I guess I was most impressed with, absolutely Notre Dame. They were ridiculously good. They are so talented. I thought they were going to put that game away and not have it go into overtime. They're phenomenal. I think those two are 1 and 2, or were 1 and 2, and now are 1 and 2 for an absolute reason. They seem to be head and shoulders above the rest of the league at this point. But we had a number of good games. I think Denver is rounding into form. They really put it on a Georgetown team who I think is emerging. And Denver showed what they're capable of doing. Baptiste at the faceoff is so fun to watch. He is the definition of a faceoff athlete. There is the FOGO still exists, but it's a dying breed. The face-off athlete is taking over. A team I guess I probably owe an apology to for my comments a few weeks ago is Albany, because anytime you can go 25-0 over any Division I team, that's ridiculous. And they did it by doing whatever they wanted to UMass Lowell. It was just wow. I mean, the game was not fun to watch, but it was fun to watch. It was so one-sided. I've had the conversation with Joe a number of times. The season feels like it's coming down to a couple of teams and everybody else. And every week I think that gap might even widen a little bit more. The North Carolina-Duke game was incredible to watch. Maryland is showing that they can do whatever they need to do to win and put it on teams. Molly or Malloy, I'm blowing his name from Brown. Dylan Malloy or Molly is so fun to watch. He is probably not a Tuaraton candidate because of his name or because of the fact that he goes to Brown, but he's had such a good season, and he's becoming must-watch lacrosse on a weekly basis. But Joe's absolutely right. Notre Dame, Syracuse, that was must-watch TV. It was awesome that it was on. It was awesome that it was available to almost all fans. And what a treat. I mean, what a better advertisement for the sport than that. That was just a highlight game.
Well, with that being said, the NCAA tournament and the NCAA is going to heat up in the next couple weeks, and we're going to make sure that we cover that to the fullest extent. And with that being said, I'm going to cut Joe Keegan loose real quick, because I think, Tom, I think there needs to be a little time to discuss exactly what happened during the NLL trade deadline, because this was a huge experience for this league. So I feel like this was one of the times where the league really had a bunch of marquee players moving franchises. And I kind of will get your opinion, because I think that the Minnesota Swarm were at the forefront of everything. So with that being said, thanks to Joe, as always, for his insight. And so, Tom, I kind of want to just kind of piggyback off that and talk about the NLL trade deadline, because I think it was one of the more exciting trade deadlines we've seen in this league. You saw a lot of players move. You saw a guy like Andrew Suter, who's been a stalwart for a franchise, be moved for a guy like Joel White. You've seen a young and up-and-coming player who was a former number one overall pick, Logan Schuss, be moved. And you saw Kevin Crowley, who is a number one pick in multiple leagues, be moved for a stalwart in the league once again by Garrett Billings. Tom, I don't even know where to start with this. We only have a couple. We have 20 minutes to talk about all these trades. Which one surprised you the most?
Probably the Suter for Joel White trade. Captain for a captain doesn't happen very often in sports. Joel White is really growing into his own as an NLL player, kind of taking on a bigger role. He's had a good run the last few weeks, started scoring some goals. I think he is an underrated defender. And you know, being from Minnesota, being a Swarm season ticket holder, Andrew Suter is more than just a player to Swarm fans. He was the lifeblood of that team. He's the spark. He's the guy that fans rally around. More people, you know, if you want people who know what the Swarm is and you ask them to name a Swarm player, 99% of them can at least tell you Andrew Suter. He was everything to this franchise, and to see him get dealt, in I think it's a good move. I don't think it's a negative move, but to see him get dealt is hard. It was tough on fans. A number of people I talked to, a number of NLL people from the Minnesota area, the people that we sit with at the games, they really, really started to question paying hundreds of dollars for season tickets next season if the team is constantly gonna tear itself down every couple of seasons. And, you know, they've been through this a number of times with Ryan Benesch, with numerous other players where the eject button gets hit far too soon. And to see Suter go and then to follow it up today with Logan Schuss getting traded. And don't get me wrong, I love Joel White and Johnny Paulus. Bringing both of them in, I actually think the Swarm are a better team because of this. But you're talking fan favorites, players who the fans have started to love and respect and watch and enjoy. And Logan Schuss, it was definitely what was best for him. He's working as a longshoreman out on the ocean there, outside of Vancouver. So getting him to Vancouver will allow him to play in the NLL, where he hasn't been 100% available for the Swarm. But it's just tough. It's just hard. I came home from work today to inform my son, who is a crazy Logan Schuss fan. I mean, the kid, that is who he plays as when we play in the backyard. When he puts his gloves, stick, and helmet on, he says he's Logan Schuss. To inform him that he got traded, it was tough. I mean, that's something, you know, it changed my son's view of lacrosse when he got to meet Logan and sit and talk to him before a game and get a chance to get to know him. That changed how he saw the game. And now the Swarm has really abandoned its fans, and that's tough. And so I answered more than your question, James, but it's sad. If you want to know how fans feel, go to the Swarm's Facebook page and just read a few of the comments, and you'll figure the moving vans are coming, because the fans are certainly leaving.
Yeah, and it's always tough to talk about a player's talk about an analyst's favorite team, because I don't think any of us are in this to do anything besides promote our favorite players and our interests, because this sport is so selective in the fans, and I just think that Minnesota did something that you never really see. They abandoned a lot of players for the players' own good. And Tom, that's the thing I want to ask you about real quick, is just how tough it is to let a player go and have to tell, like, obviously, like, with your children, almost tell your kids, like, this isn't like a Michael Jordan retiring and going to the Wizards because he just wanted to play again. This is almost like for someone's benefit. And so for lacrosse fans everywhere, like, this is always kind of a tough proposition, I feel like. I feel like it's unique to this sport. And I kind of just want to talk about that just for a second, get your opinions on it, because it seems like players' other jobs obviously should be more important. But at the same time, it's tough letting go of these players, especially a player like Andrew Suter, because he was so instrumental in their playoff run a couple of years ago, and he was so instrumental in his injury and how much of a force he was. So I just want to give you the floor for a second, let you talk about exactly what these players meant to the Minnesota franchise and kind of give them their due, I guess how I'm going to say it. I'm just going to open up the floor to you and let you go ahead and go do your thing.
Well, not taking anything away from the Billings-Crowley trade. That's a big move. That's two of the premier players in the league getting traded for each other. Crowley is a superstar in the making. I still think he's going to become an MVP candidate year in and year out in the future. But, going back to the Swarm, you know, Suter he runs out. There's a guy who sits directly across from the tunnel every single game. He has been at every single Swarm game for as long as I can remember going to games. And Suter runs out and chest bumps the guy against the glass, through the glass, every single game. The guy comes in early. He's allowed to go to his seat before the normal fans are allowed to go to their seats. I don't know who he is. I don't know what the relationship is there, but there's something. And you lost a connection. You lost a pre-game ritual that's gone on for at least 5 years. And he's the guy he's the fighter. That's maybe the best way to put it. He's the fighter, but it's more than that. He's the guy who makes the big hit, the flashy play, flashes the guy into the glass, gets his helmet knocked off, goes to the locker room bleeding, comes back out for another play later and scores a goal and celebrates against the glass, screaming with the fans. He's also the guy that's at every one of the fan events. He's the captain of the team. He's the guy that every fan looks to. He's the blue-collar, not the Ivy League player that is the fancy guy. He's the kick-your-butt tough guy on the team. And, you know, that's maybe it's the Minnesota attitude. Maybe I'll go with that. You know, everybody heralds Ben Williams, the faceoff guy from Syracuse, as being a tough, physical northern guy from Minnesota. And you know, Suter might not be from here, but, you know, he's an adopted son, and he has that the right mentality for the people of this area. And so he was just special. And Logan Shush, reigning rookie of the year, you trade Ryan Benesch, sets the team record for goals scored. Sets the record. They make the playoffs. They have a good run, and boom, he's out the door. You get the number one overall pick in return, and you're wondering what the team is going to do with it. And they bring in this kid out of Ohio State who's a dynamite lefty shooter. And you know what? They had a bad season last year, but they started to find some success when Logan found his shooting stroke. He started to have some success. He's a good-looking, wholesome kid who's from the Midwest. You know, in their mind, he's not. He's a Canadian native, but he's an Ohio State alumni, so that you get that feeling that he's Midwest alumni, so fans connect with him. He's got a big smile. He's great to be around. First time I met him, he was buying Swarm sweatshirts for his family because they weren't able to come down to a game. But the Swarm played in Vancouver the next week, and he wanted to take apparel home to his family. He came out past security to stand there and talk to fans before warm-ups. He is everything you want in a star player. He's everything you want in the type of player you know. If I was going to pick one of the players, I've met a ton of players. NLL, MLL, NFL. I've met players from all different kinds of sports. And I don't know that if I wanted my son to emulate a player and be like a player and want to be a player, I could have picked a better guy than him.
Well, I don't know another way to illustrate the impact of that trade, to be honest with you. Everybody should get exactly what that means. I mean, it's the exact same thing as if your favorite player was traded from your team to another team, like the emotions you go through. And the thing that I just kind of want to move on to, and I hate to do this because we need to move on to another topic, even though we understand exactly what Schuss and Suter meant to that team, is one of the big market trades, and that's Billings for Crowley. Because you're looking at a Toronto Rock team that already clinched the playoff spot, and you look at New England, who's at the very bottom of these standings. And Tom, I just got to know, like, what do you make of this? We only have like 10 minutes left. I know we could possibly talk about this for a long time, but at the same time, I mean, this was a huge trade. I mean, you're trading a tremendous asset for a guy who I don't know what to make of this trade at all, because I don't think it was an apples to apples trade. I think it's possibly about something off the field. At the same point in time, though, the Rock right now they're the only team in the league that has clinched a playoff spot. So what do you make about the Billings and Crowley trade at this point in time?
Billings wanted out of Toronto. I don't think that's a secret to NLL insiders. I think it was more what he was going to get dealt for. When I first heard rumors of this trade, Crowley was the player that was talked about, and I was told he was off the table and that it wasn't an option. But, yeah, Billings wants out of Toronto and wants a chance to go to a different franchise. The Black Wolves are looking to win. They moved Joel White for Andrew Suter to toughen up their defense and give them another presence down low. And now they bring in a true scoring threat / champion. Billings has been hurt, but he's just one of those players that year in and year out, he's a top point scorer. So maybe in my mind, Toronto traded Dukshin for potential, because I don't think Crowley is as good as he's going to be. I think he's still working that direction, and he'll be just fine. It's just a matter of time before he gets to what he's fully capable of. I think he's a very good player, but, you know, as far as it goes, right now, Billings has had the better NLL career. Is that maybe the better way to put it? But long term, you got a player that wanted a new home, and you traded him for as close to equal value as you could get.
We'll tell you what, Tom, last question that I have for you, and this is going to be an NLL question. And we haven't talked a lot about this league throughout the course of the season, but I just kind of want to ask a quick little playoff question, because we know Toronto has clinched a playoff berth. We know a lot of teams are still eligible to make the playoffs. So as a betting man, which obviously I am, if I'm going to take Toronto and Edmonton versus the field, I'll take Toronto, Edmonton, and Colorado versus the field. Are you with me? Or are you against me? And what do you think about exactly what this playoff race is going to make itself? And I need you to limit your answer to about 3 minutes, if you could.
Well, you can't not include Rochester in any NLL championship conversation, because
that's the fun part about it, because Toronto obviously seems like they're the dominant team still from the regular season, which we've seen before with Edmonton, with other teams, but not to include Rochester at some point in time, is that dynasty, do you think they're not going to do it? Like, I don't know. Go ahead.
Well, Toronto has played more games than anybody else, so they have a leg up. But they're 11-3. Edmonton could be, 10-4 at one point. Rochester could be 10-4 at one point once they play the same number of games. So they're not all that far behind. The thing that I think separates Toronto and Edmonton, so I am with you on this one, is they score a lot of goals and they don't give up that many. And that is winning. That is how sports work. I mean, so those two teams to me are the standouts. Toronto has more wins at this point. I think Edmonton will get to plenty of wins, but I just think that at this time, those two are the favorites, and it's because their goal differential is ridiculous.
It's going to be interesting because we all know about this league the same way with the MLO, really. I mean, it all comes down to the last couple of games. And so this is going to be extremely interesting to see exactly how these teams shake themselves out. Obviously, Toronto has a playoff spot locked up. And obviously, a lot of these teams are favorites to make the playoffs. But I think a lot of these teams could possibly move themselves forward. And with that being said, I do want to go and close out the show and say thank you to all of our guests tonight. Thank you. Big thank you to Rob Pinnell. Big thank you to Marcus Holman. Big thank you to Chad Wiedmeyer as far as giving us insight into training camps 2015. I think that this is going to be a huge year for the NLL. And I think that just because we had those guys on, it's incredible to hear their insight. So I want to thank each and every one of them for coming on. And especially to Holman, because as we said before, Tom and I are going to head down to Ohio and check out their first home opener. And so that's going to be kind of amazing to see exactly how this team manifests itself moving forward. Want to thank NLL Radio and the Lex Worm experience. And as far as everything else is concerned, everybody, I want to go ahead and preview a little bit of the Lax Dirt experience coming forward, because we are fully planning on making lacrosse a little bit more of an advanced statistic as far as everything is concerned. And so I'm not going to give too much going forward, but I think that you guys are all going to be really impressed as the things that we are going to be doing going forward. So I want to thank Tom and Joe for coming on. I want to thank all of our guests. I want to thank all of our sponsors, Laxer.com, the Laxworm Experience, everything else moving forward. And 10-Man Ride, also, if you guys haven't checked that out, if you guys are looking for collegiate lacrosse experience, that is the place to go. And other than that, we will see you guys next Tuesday when it will no longer be the Tom Bovee birthday experience. Happy birthday to Tom, as always. Every year, even though he's getting super old. I muted him just because he can't say anything now, but he's getting super old. And so everyone on Twitter, I don't know if it's at I Know Lax anymore, but either way, wish Tom happy birthday because he deserves it. He's, like I said, getting his twilight years, so let's move him forward with as much grace and dignity as we possibly can, and we will talk to you guys next week. Tuesdays, 8 o'clock. MLL Radio, Laxworm Experience, and we look forward to seeing you guys then. Tweet at LaxDirt if you guys have any questions, comments, concerns. We'd love to hear from you guys, and we will see you next week. But like I said, thanks for listening, and we look forward to talking to you guys next week.